Hi, everyone. I'm Chris Gasper. It's Friday, December 29th, and welcome to Season Ticket. We're going to talk about the New England Patriots today as they go into their regular season finale against the New York Jets. But most of the news about the Patriots hasn't been about that game and what's going to happen on the field, but about a big addition that they made off the field, James Harrison, former linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And his joining the Patriots hasn't been without some controversy. To help me break this down, we now bring in Boston Globe NFL reporter and Patriots reporter Ben Volen. Ben, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Trying to stay warm today.
Yeah, I know. I think everybody is. It's definitely very cold outside. A lot of cold feelings from the folks in Pittsburgh towards James Harrison after he was released by the Steelers and decided to sign with the Patriots. He decided to embed himself here with the enemy. I'm just curious for your thoughts on this signing from a Patriots standpoint.
Yeah, I think they're in an all-hands-on-deck approach right now on defense, especially the front seven, with injuries to Hightower and Kyle Van Noy and Alan Branch. They're just looking for bodies up front. The run defense has not been very good of late, although they were much better against the Bills last week. But, you know, Eric Lee, this guy they picked up from Buffalo practice squad, he's played like a practice squad guy at times. He hasn't been very good at setting the edge on the run. And frankly, it's been an issue for them all season, going back to Cassius Marsh. They tried him at that position and then cut him loose about midseason.
Him.
Yeah, exactly. From the long ago. So James Harrison, I think they bring him in for 10 snaps, 15 snaps a game. I mean, the guy's 39 years old. I don't think they're expecting too much from him, but hasn't played at all this season and is still in good shape. And go chase down the quarterback a couple times a game. And I think really in the run game, you know, he's pretty squat and stout, and we've seen him bench press 8 million pounds or whatever it is. Just go out there and grab that offensive tackle and don't let him get outside you, and make sure you set the edge and then let Landon Roberts clean up the play. So, you know, I think that's really what it's all about right now. It's all hands on deck, and a veteran player like that generally doesn't come available this time of year.
Yeah, when I look at the move, I think this is sort of I would characterize this a little bit as a desperation move, in the sense that they desperately need bodies at that outside linebacker defensive end position. As you mentioned, Eric Lee's a guy they picked up off the Bills practice squad. We've seen Dietrich Wise. We've seen Trey Flowers. They don't have a lot of depth there. I'm just sort of curious why they would bring this particular player in, because he is 39 years old, as you mentioned. He has not played much at all this year. One sack. I think he played 40 snaps for the Steelers. And I just wonder if he's worth sort of the trouble. I mean, this is a guy who has always sort of marched to the beat of his own drummer, has been a little bit recalcitrant throughout the course of his career. And at 39, I don't think he's suddenly going to change his ways to assimilate with the Patriots culture. I mean, he already broke Patriots protocol the first day he was here by doing an interview with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to sort of fire back at the Steelers and the players there who were saying that he quit on them and that he was showing up to meetings and pulling up a recliner and snoozing and snoring during meetings and all that stuff. I just don't know how much this guy has left. And I was surprised the Patriots made this decision to sign him, because I think he's a guy that could end up being more disruptive off the field than he is on the field for you in terms of actually helping you.
Chris, you've been around the Patriots for how many years now?
Oh, a long time, since 2003 at least.
Is there any question that James Harrison's going to fall in line and, you know, quote, do his job and just be a good soldier from here on out? I mean,
yeah, there is. He already broke protocol the first day he was here.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that he broke protocol. I mean, he was getting hammered by his Steelers teammates and from people in Pittsburgh. And he was sitting there in the locker room, I mean, staring at his phone. He saw it all. And so we kept asking the Patriots, you sure he doesn't want to comment? You sure he doesn't want to talk? Because they told us that his first media availability would come today on Friday. And they said, no. But, I mean, we don't know that he broke protocol. He may have gotten permission from the team to do that interview with the
Steelers.
That's
fair. But I would say this. He would be the first. How many times does a guy show up? Again, you've been around the Patriots a long time. Let me turn the question around. How many guys show up here and immediately talk about their past? Isn't the standard response that's in the past? I mean, when Michael Floyd showed up, did he talk about what people in Arizona were saying about him? No.
No, of course not. Of course not. But I have zero concern that James Harrison – look, the Steelers let him run wild there. I mean, they let him skip off-season workouts and training camp. They let him bring a recliner into the film room, apparently, and they put up with his snoozing and his, you know, leaving games early. Like, they put up with all that. The Patriots don't. And time and again, they've brought in these guys – and they don't always work out on the field, but they fall in line. I mean, Chad Ochocinco got completely neutered in the 1 year that he was here, and you barely heard a peep from him. And Albert Haynesworth came here and I think was okay. And LeGarrette Blount is a saint when he plays for the Patriots. Sure. And look, for James Harrison too, it's basically costing them nothing. He's signed for only one more week of the regular season. He's going to make the veteran minimum, about $58,000. He's replacing a guy on the roster who would have been making about that anyway. So it's low cost. It's 10, 15 snaps. Go out there. We need some help on the edge. And like, they're not going to put up with him falling asleep in meetings. And I don't think James Harrison even would do that. This is a totally different environment. He's the newcomer. He's the visitor. He's the one here on, you know, renting out a space for a couple weeks and hoping to get a ring and get some revenge at the Steelers. So I have zero issue. I have zero concern that he's going to be a problem child for the Patriots here.
Do you think he can still play?
I think he can do what they're going to ask him to do. For 15 snaps, go out there and grapple with an offensive tackle and use that upper body strength that you know so well. I mean, I don't know how much pass rush he has left, but remember against the Chiefs last year, he had that big game in the playoffs and he drew that key holding penalty on Eric Fisher at the end of the game to help kind of seal it for the Steelers. So I think, you know, he's an effort guy. Like, go out there and he might not beat you with his first move, but if the Patriots can cover for just long enough, he might be able to track down the quarterback. So, you know, players of like this don't generally come available this time of year. It's low cost, low risk. I think, you know, for the 10, 15 snaps a game, he'll be just fine with the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of think at this point you're getting a name, not a player. Like, I just question how much he has left. I mean, the guy's had a great career. 2008 Defensive Player of the Year. One of the hardest playing players on the field with the Steelers of this generation. I just don't know how much is left in the tank. And I was sort of surprised that they decided to bring this guy in. And you're sort of saying, you know, where he'll help the most is against the run. And I don't discount that. That's important. But when the Patriots have gotten eliminated in the playoffs, the issue has been stopping the pass and trying to rush the passer. And if you're saying he can't really do that at a high level anymore, and I don't think he can, then I look at this and say that, again, you're getting a name. You're not really getting a guy who's going to materially affect your team.
Yeah,
let me move on to
probably not. I mean, it's week 17. Players don't come open like this, and you're looking at either a James Harrison or, you know, some guy off a practice squad or some kid.
Well, Eric Lee was some guy off a practice squad. I'll take Eric Lee over James Harrison every day of the week right now, based on the way Eric Lee's rushing the passer.
Lee's been okay. You're right. He's been decent rushing the passer, but against the run, he's been pretty bad. So
that's
fair.
He has struggled against the run. And again, look, if Harrison's here to do what you said, stop the run. I mean, that's good. I'm not saying that doesn't matter. I'm just saying in the playoffs, I worry about their pass rush, and I'm not sure he can impact that.
And well, you know, last point for me, Chris, aren't you getting a motivated James Harrison right now? All week, all we've heard is he's only played 40 snaps. He's got nothing left in the tank. You know, his Steelers teammates think he's a joke. Don't you think he's pretty motivated right now to go out and prove that he does still have just a little bit of fuel left?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he's a guy who's always been motivated. He's always had that chip on his shoulder, but you're absolutely right. And I think part of signing with the Patriots is trying to prove something to his former teammates and his former team in Pittsburgh. Based on the comments he made to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he obviously feels like they did him wrong, like they lied to him. I mean, he talked about it in the interview, the idea that, well, they said, you know, you're going to play 25% of the snaps. And he said, well, I didn't even play 25 snaps. Now, that's an exaggeration. He did play more than 25 snaps this year. But he feels like they misled him about what his role was going to be. And I think he wants to prove that he still can play in this league. And the Patriots, I think, will give him that opportunity. And I want to sort of segue to something you had written about when they made this signing, which is the idea of the Patriots bringing in sort of mercenaries. And you referenced some of the guys before. I think we can do away with the idea that the Patriots somehow have more rectitude or higher moral standards than other organizations. To me, really, there's not a big difference between the Patriots when it comes to giving players a second chance and, say, the Cincinnati Bengals or the Oakland Raiders. We're talking about a team that drafted Aaron Hernandez, signed Albert Haynesworth, traded for Aqib Talib, claimed Michael Floyd off waivers last year after he got what the state of Arizona termed a super extreme DUI. Now they've signed Harrison, who hit the mother of his children with an open hand in 2008 and snapped her cell phone in half in a fit of anger. I think the idea, again, that the Patriots have some sort of higher standard for their players is something that can go out the window.
Yeah, I've definitely never really put too much credence into that. At the end of the day, it's a business of winning games, and the Patriots have taken chances on many of these guys over the years. And, you know, once in a while they do take a moral stand, but honestly, it's for a player who generally probably isn't worth the trouble. But when I, you know, when I said they have a team of mercenaries, that wasn't really the angle I was going at. It was more just to show how unique it is this year in the way that they're putting together the roster here in the second half of the season, mostly due to injuries, but also due to the fact that they punted on the draft and they don't have much of a pipeline right now. They don't have much talent waiting in the wings, either at the bottom of the roster or on the practice squad. And it's forced them to just find these random mercenaries, you know, from various practice squads or guys off the street like Ricky Jean-Francois, cast-offs like Kenny Britt and James Harrison. They're just collecting all these guys. They've added 8 players to the roster just since the trade deadline, and that's the most. I only went back the last 5 years, and that's the most over the last 5 years in this kind of current Patriots era. And it's just interesting. You look out there, and it's like they're plucking guys off the street like Eric Lee, and they're throwing them in there for 50 snaps a game. Or Nick Grigsby is all of a sudden playing 20, 30 special team snaps a game because Slater and Ebner and Brandon King have been out. So they've just been kind of hit hard by injuries in some key places this year. And because they haven't developed too much young talent, they kind of punted on the draft. They've been forced to just find these random players all over the country off the street or on other teams to help them just fill in spots and play these games here.
Yeah, and they've done a little bit of that in the past. I remember they signed Eric Moore, a guy they got from the Canadian Football League, to rush the passer late in the year before. And then in 2011, when they were decimated by injuries, they brought in guys. You had guys on there, you know, like Antoine Molden was out there playing. So when they've had injuries before, they've been forced to bring in guys where you're like, who is this guy? I mean, Kyle Arrington at first was one of those guys when he got his chance. It was like this guy on the practice squad. You're like, oh, my God, they have to put Kyle Arrington in. But he ended up having a great Patriots career. So, I mean, they're very good at that. When there are injuries, they will scour other teams' practice squads. They will look to the Canadian Football League. They will leave no stone unturned to try and bring a player in who can help their team and bolster their depth.
Yeah, I mean, the season I look to is 2015 when they had to sign Steven Jackson off the street just to have a running back over the last few games of the season. It's not ideal, and they've made it work, and somehow they're 12-3, excuse me, and they've won 10 of their last 11 games. But they really need to get Rex Burkhead and James White and Chris Hogan and Alan Branch, Kyle Van Noy. They have to get these guys healthy and ready for the playoffs. And you hope that some of this at the end of the year has been roster management. Belichick knows that he needs these guys for the playoffs more than he does maybe against a game against the Bills. But they really need to get these guys healthy, because if you're relying on Eric Lee for 50 snaps in the playoffs or James Harrison or Kenny Britt, you're probably going to be in trouble.
Yeah, that's a good point, Ben. And I did like your piece on that and sort of the saying they're the Lady Liberty of the NFL. And along those lines, I look at it and say, you know, hey, give me your discarded, disgruntled veterans, your questionable effort players, your guys of suspect character on and off the field. We'll take them. And we think that if they can help us and we can deal with them in our culture, that ultimately it will benefit us. And look, they certainly have won more of those than they've lost. We'll see what happens here with Harrison. I know you and I disagree. I just think it's a little riskier. Maybe risky is not the right word there. Maybe that's not fair. I just look at and say, for a guy that has always sort of been a little bit of an iconoclast, a guy that basically said to Men's Health before that he thinks you cheated, and he said that in a story with Men's Health, where he said, I should have another ring, and accused the Patriots of cheating against the Steelers in 2004. To bring this type of guy in when he's at the end, for me, I look at it and say, I don't really know if it's worth it.
Well, Chris, that's all very fair, and I love the fact that they brought him in. It just, if assuming they do play the Steelers in the AFC Championship game, I mean, it just, what an amazing storyline to look out there and see number 92 now wearing a Patriots uniform and the Flying Elvis helmet instead of wearing black and gold. It's going to make for an incredible AFC Championship game.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about that. And look, Bill Belichick's track record on these signings is pretty good. He tends to win more of them than he loses. We'll see what happens here with James Harrison, who's expected to make his Patriots debut on Sunday against the New York Jets at Gillette Stadium as the Patriots wrap up their regular season. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, more with Ben Volen of the Boston Globe. We're going to ask him, what's wrong with Tom Brady? That's next. Stay tuned. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. Back now with Ben Volin. Ben, I want to ask you about Tom Brady. I know you have a story coming out on Sunday in the Boston Globe about Brady. Over the last five games, he's had an interception in every single one of those games. That's something that hasn't happened for him, a stretch of five consecutive games with an interception since 2002, which was his first full season as a starter. He's thrown eight touchdowns and six interceptions in the last five games. Have you noticed anything in particular that is leading to this performance from Brady, which is not horrible, but certainly is not the normal standard we're used to?
Yeah, it's interesting because all the talk around the NFL this week is, well, Brady should be the MVP. But if you look at his closing stretch here, it's been decidedly average. I'm looking at the month of December. He's played four games. He's 19th in the NFL in passer rating at 81.5. He's below Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles in passer rating and way behind Jimmy Garoppolo, who's at 96.2 and is putting up better numbers across the board than Brady right now.
Don't start that.
Yeah. Let's light that match and drop it and walk
exactly.
away. You know, I went back and I wanted to see if there's something going on with Brady. I went back, I watched all 201 plays from the last 5 weeks. That's
wow.
every throw, attempt, kneel down, scramble, play called back by penalty. I went back and watched it on the coach's film and I wanted to see, you know, is there something wrong mechanically? Is he hiding an injury? And I definitely didn't notice anything consistent. There were a few themes that popped up. One is that it's his teammates, and I think the injuries have really started to affect Brady. When Gronk's in there, like Gronk is the only guy that can create separation consistently, the only guy that can catch the ball in traffic consistently. That's a key thing. He doesn't always have to be open, and Brady can still get him the football over the middle with a linebacker on him. You know, Brandon Cooks, Chris Hogan, that one game against the Dolphins, these guys just could not create any separation. And Brady's been getting flustered in the pocket, especially that Miami game without Rob Gronkowski. He wouldn't set his feet. He wasn't seeing the field. He was missing some open guys, wasn't throwing with the right anticipation, and he just wasn't getting the help from his receivers. The other defenses in a lot of these games, they're playing press man coverage, and Brandon Cooks and Dwayne Allen and Philip Dorsett, these guys aren't getting great separation right now, and it's affecting Brady in the passing game. But the good still far outweighs the bad with Tom Brady. He still, like that Steelers game, those three straight passes in a row to Rob Gronkowski in the fourth quarter were all incredible for various reasons. Brady's ability to dip and duck away from the pressure, move around the pocket, throw on the run, deliver perfectly accurate throws to Rob Gronkowski. It was a clinic in the fourth quarter. And there are some other throws as well. In every game, he pieces together two or three that make you sit back and say, wow, this guy still got it at 40 years old. But he's not seeing the field a little as well as he should be, and he's not as comfortable. He's maybe staying in the pocket a little too long, trying to make too many plays with his feet instead of just throwing the ball away. And a couple of his interceptions have come because of that. He's trying to do too much instead of just giving up on the play. So I don't see anything fatally flawed with Tom Brady. His mechanics aren't out of whack. I don't see an injury really popping up and affecting him. But like I said, I think it comes back to his teammates, the injuries. He's got Gronk and Deion Lewis, and he doesn't really feel confident in anyone else, and it kind of has a cascade effect on the rest of the offense.
And sort of along those lines, the interception he threw for a touchdown to Jordan Poyer against Buffalo last Sunday, I thought that was an example of not being on the same page with the new receiver. I thought Kenny Britt rounded out that route. He wasn't where Brady thought he was supposed to be, and he even hesitated at the top of the route. It reminded me a little bit of the interception he threw last year in the AFC divisional playoffs when he was trying to throw to Michael Floyd and it went off Michael Floyd's hands. So to your point, I think there is a situation with the Patriots where there's some guys he doesn't trust or some guys he's not familiar with. I thought that interception last week was on Britt more than it was on Brady.
What's interesting, I give credit to the Bills for that one. They disguised their defense really well. When you go back and watch the coaches film, they show like a two deep safety look. And right before the snap, Brady doesn't notice Jordan Poyer starting to creep towards the line of scrimmage. And while they show cover two, they actually kind of drop into this three deep cover three look, and Poyer moves into the middle of the field, and Brady just never saw him. And so he delivers that slant pass to Kenny Britt, and Poyer just jumps in front and picks it clean. So I actually give credit to Jordan Poyer and Bills coach Sean McDermott for coming up with some good schemes there. And they do it. The Bills do a lot of that. They do a lot of like rotating right at the snap or right before the snap, where they show you one look and then fall back into another. And to me, that was one where Jordan Poyer kind of goaded Brady into making that throw.
Yeah, that I've seen it too. I've watched the tape. You're right about that. I mean, they definitely disguised it well, but Brady can put the ball into tight windows, and a guy like Kenny Britt, he's on the team to use that big body to sort of fight for the ball. I know you've been really big on Brandon Cooks not fighting for the ball this year. He's supposed to use that big body to sort of fight and box a guy out. I thought the end of that route was, I thought it was a really sloppy route from Britt. He certainly didn't do Brady any favors there. So a lot of credit, obviously, to Buffalo. But I think if he's throwing that pass to Julian Edelman, it's a completion and not an interception, because Edelman realizes what's going on there, realizes he has to fight for the ball, and runs a better route where he sort of boxes out, blocks out that safety who's rushing in there to prevent him from intercepting that ball the way it got intercepted. But, I mean, overall, in terms of trust with wide receivers, that leads me to this. There is a guy that he trusts who is back with the team. That's Malcolm Mitchell. He was activated off of IR. He returned to practice this week. We'll see if he plays on Sunday against the Jets. But if he can play, Ben, and if he can rejoin the team, how much can Malcolm Mitchell help them here down the stretch?
Yeah, I'm still playing it safe with Malcolm Mitchell. I'm not expecting too much from him. This is a guy who obviously hasn't played a snap of football all season. Had a very nice rookie season, 401 yards and 4 touchdowns, played in 14 games in the regular season, and did it after sitting out most of the preseason because he injured his elbow last year. So he's shown that he can come in and step in and be productive. But again, to do it in December after taking the last 3 months off and it's really cold weather, and you know, Brady's clearly focusing on Rob Gronkowski right now, and Amendola and Cooks are the secondary options. So, you know, I think Mitchell's probably good for 20, 25 snaps a game. He probably takes Philip Dorsett's role, but it's not like Brady's looking towards Dorsett at all. Mitchell is someone who can help, but I'm still not expecting some big impact from him. It's a tough spot for him to just jump in while the train's moving right now, and in these big games and cold weather and all that. It's, you know, I don't think he's going to be too much of an impact for the Patriots.
You're right that it's certainly a tough spot for him. There's no question there. And I think back to Brandon LaFell, you know, coming off of IR with his foot injury in 2015, and he wasn't the same guy, and he came back, he had a bunch of drops, and he never got any momentum that season, and he wasn't the same guy, and it sort of hurt them. I think the fact that Mitchell is back now and they're going to give him an opportunity speaks to something we talked about, you know, earlier here on the pod, which is the idea that it's all hands on deck. And when you look at what's happening with that wide receiver core, as you mentioned, guys aren't getting consistent separation, so why not see what Malcolm Mitchell can do? It certainly is a tough ask, but when I go back to Super Bowl 51 and what he did in that game, you know, 6 receptions for 70 yards on 7 targets, he really sort of bailed him out. I mean, they were having trouble with somebody beating man coverage on the outside in that Super Bowl, and he was able to do it. Maybe they're hoping that lightning will strike twice, and in some big game, whether it's playoffs or if they make it to the Super Bowl again, he can do that for them again and sort of help them out.
Yeah, no question. You're getting a guy back who knows the system, and they obviously think highly of him as a football player, and they don't need him to be a 10-catch guy. They don't need him to be Edelman or anything like that. But I do wonder if it says something about Chris Hogan also, that maybe his shoulder isn't responding, and they're a little wary of how much he can contribute. Kenny Britt's not going anywhere. They signed him to a 2-year deal, so he's going to be around. Philip Dorsett's here. Hogan, Amendola, Cooks. So now Malcolm Mitchell is their 6th receiver. And certainly his experience in the system is the way he stepped up in big spots last year in the Super Bowl, of course. But I do wonder if maybe Chris Hogan's injury isn't responding, because he's now missed 5 out of 6 games and obviously didn't look like himself in that Miami game.
Yeah, that's true. He hasn't looked like himself. And I think they've missed him, because that's a guy that does have Brady's trust. Mitchell is a guy that has Brady's trust. Dorsett hasn't gotten on track here. I've been a little disappointed in Amendola. Not that he hasn't played well. I mean, he has, but I just thought the numbers would be higher given the injuries, given the guys who are missing. I think in some of these games where Hogan's been out or Gronk's been out, I was expecting him to step up and have a huge game, and he played well, but I didn't feel like he sort of was able to make up for the production of guys that were missing. How much of that is the fact that he's somebody they kind of keep on a pitch count because he's had injury problems in the past? And how much of that is just Danny Amendola is not, you know, an elite receiver? He's not Julian Edelman. He's not a guy that you can look to be a 1 or 2 and sort of carry you.
It's definitely, I think a lot has to do with the former. They keep him on a pitch count. He takes a lot of hits and is a very physical player and is a smaller guy. We've all seen it. He's always banged up. So they definitely keep him on a pitch count, 30, 40 snaps a game, somewhere in there. And he's not the same receiver as Edelman, and that's okay. I mean, Julian Edelman's a fantastic receiver. You know, Amendola doesn't quite have the preciseness of his routes, isn't quite as quick. He's had some big games. He had 6 for 76 in that loss to Miami. He was the only one who could consistently get open. He had 8 for 66 in a touchdown against Oakland, 8 for 77 in that Thursday night game against Tampa, filling in for Gronk. So he stepped up in some spots. He's been very clutch on third down when they need a big play. Like, Amendola always seems to come through, but he's not going to be a high volume guy. He's not going to be your first option for the most part. He can move the chains over the middle, but you really need him to be your third or fourth option. And that's kind of where he is right now. He's got 616 yards and 2 touchdowns this year. That's Danny Amendola. You're getting what you pretty much asked for. The guy who needs to step up, no question, I think, is Brandon Cooks. A guy who's been completely wiped out by some young cornerbacks this year, Marshawn Lattimore in week 2 and Xavien Howard back in week 14. You know, Brandon Cooks does have 1,003 yards, and his 16.7 yards per reception is second in the NFL, so he's been a good home run hitter. But he's been kind of like Dave Kingman. It's either a home run or a strikeout. The last several weeks, he's only caught 7 of 15 passes that's come his way. Excuse me, 15 of 29 passes that's come his way, only 50%. It's basically a toss-up if he's going to come down with the ball. And not all of them are his fault. Sometimes Brady has definitely missed him on deep balls when he has a step. But, you know, Brandon Cooks, I definitely expected more. I feel like his stats are a little empty this year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, certainly the production. He's had games where you've had a lot of production, and then games where you're looking at it and saying, okay, there's not as much production there. So I would say it's very fair, as you pointed out, to say it's been uneven. You look at the numbers at the end of the year, and they're good. But on a game-by-game basis, it's been a little bit uneven there. I just wanted to ask you about this issue from the Patriots' victory over Buffalo that's sort of left over, and that's instant replay. And whether we need instant replay reform, a lot of people thought the decision to overturn the Kelvin Benjamin touchdown catch for the Bills at the end of the first half was one that should not have been made. It was very controversial. People thought it did not live up to the standard of clear and incontrovertible evidence to overturn it. Do you think the NFL has to take a second look at instant replay, or at the very least say to Alberto Riveron, the senior vice president of officiating for the NFL, who's back in the command center helping make some of these calls, hey, Alberto, just remember what the standard is. The standard's pretty high. The standard here really is beyond a shadow of a doubt, not a probability proposition.
Yeah, I mean, how much time do we have left here on the podcast? Because I could talk all day about this topic. people complain. You and I went back and forth after the Pittsburgh game about the catch rule. And to me, it's not the rule, but it's, as you said, the application of instant replay. And Alberto Riveron is going way too far in his interpretations of the plays and overturning these calls. I've seen on Twitter this week, someone put it in an interesting way that I agree with. To overturn a call, they're using a civil court standard, you know, preponderance of evidence, 50.1%, where it should be a criminal standard. It should be egregious. If you have to sit there and stare at 6 different replays for 20, you know, two or three minutes and you're not quite sure, then keep the call on the field. And there has been a definite move away from keeping the call on the field and just using fractions of frames in the instant replay to overturn a call. And that's definitely not what it was meant to be. And the owners need to sit Al Riveron down this offseason and tell him you're going, you know, taking this way too close, way too literally. We need to stick with the calls on the field unless it's an obvious mistake. And if he can't do it, then they need to find someone else to do it. He wasn't supposed to be in this job. It was supposed to be Dean Blandino. And Blandino abruptly left the league in April, and they were kind of caught with their hands tied behind their back. And so they just elevated Riveron from the number 2 to the number 1 position. And to me, he just has not been up to the challenge this year. It's too much responsibility for him, and he's overturning these calls that are way too close and not clear and conclusive. So they definitely have to make sure they adhere to that standard next year.
Well, maybe Alberto Riveron is just taking his cues, Ben, from the Wells report and going with more probable than not when he's making these decisions. At least that's definitely what it feels like. So maybe he's going with the Deflategate standard the NFL used, more probable than not that Kelvin Benjamin didn't get his foot down. I will say this. I wonder if he's alienating some of the rank and file officials here, because I know after that game, you talked to Bills players. I talked to Micah Hyde of the Bills, and he said he spoke with the other officials there, not Craig Rolstad, who is the referee and gets to look at the screen and communicate with Alberto Riveron on those replay reviews. And the other officials said to Micah Hyde, there's a reason we made the call that we made. So I wonder if behind the scenes, some of these officials feel like they're being undermined by Riveron and Instant Replay.
Yeah, there's no question that's the case. I heard specifically that the officials were ticked off about the Austin Seferian Jenkins overturn, that touchdown against the Patriots in week 8, which again, I thought was the correct call, but that's another case where it's, you're getting very technical there. I thought the Jesse James call was the correct overturn, but this one, I just, you'll never convince me that it was conclusive, that his foot was off the ground and that it deserved to be overturned. At best, it was inconclusive. And of course the officials are upset that their calls are being undermined and that Riveron's basically officiating the game from New York. And even NFL Films this week, I was watching Inside the NFL on Showtime, and they showed the official, like the side judge, not the referee, but the side judge was sitting there talking to Sean McDermott. And he's like, it looks like a catch to me. And then McDermott's like, how is that overturned? And the official says, I don't know. I don't understand it. So
that's not good.
Yeah. It was fascinating that NFL Films and Showtime, they chose to show that segment too. So, you know, they're definitely calling this way too technically, and they need to, it just has to be an egregious mistake, something that's obviously caught with the naked eye or with one or two replay looks, and then move on.
Yeah, I completely agree, Ben. We'll see what happens with Instant Replay moving forward. Hopefully it doesn't victimize the Patriots or any other team here as we get to the most important games of the year. All right, that's Ben Volen of the Boston Globe. You can find him on Twitter. He is a prolific tweeter. You'll find him at Ben Volen. Ben, we look forward to your story on Sunday about Tom Brady. Some great information there. Thanks for coming on Season Ticket.
All right, thanks a lot, Chris.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Every Friday, we like to thank the people who make this podcast possible. Season Ticket is produced by Steve Saffron, Josh Schwartz, Scott Thurston, Joe Sullivan, John Parati, Paul Vikas, Jessica Alpert, Matt Reed, and our intern, Brendan Coughlin. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, have a happy new year, everybody.